Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated, and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello and welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. Thank you for joining me, for giving up your time to listen to what we've got to say about diabetes here. There's many, many things to be said, and this week's interview is going to be one which I think you'll find very useful, very interesting, and hopefully there's some simple changes, some simple things you can do to help improve your health as a result of listening to it. Tell you a little bit more about that later. First of all, I want to just go straight into some of the news items that I've found. First of all, looking at Diabetes UK's website, and that is diabetes.org.uk. And they are on there, they talk a little bit about the coronavirus vaccines and diabetes. And they are encouraging people strongly to get the coronavirus vaccine because, as we know, people with diabetes are vulnerable to developing a severe illness if they do get coronavirus, and vaccines are the most effective way to prevent that from happening. Now, in the UK here, there's a lot of people being in a bit of confusion. I was myself until recently as to where we stand as people with diabetes. Where are we in the queue for the vaccine? Last week, I think I said that my parents hadn't had it yet. They have now had it. They had it. They were called, I think, on the Friday or maybe the Thursday to have it on the Saturday. So last Saturday, they had their vaccine. Most people with diabetes are in priority group 6. In the UK, this is, of course. We've got several vaccines that are being rolled out over here now. The two main ones, the first ones, of course, were the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine and then the Oxford AstraZeneca one. And I think the Moderna one has possibly now been approved just recently as well. But the priority groups are the elderly, care home residents and their carers, number one. Everyone 80 years old and above and frontline health and social care workers. Number three, everyone 75 years old and above. Number four, everyone 70 years old and above and clinically extremely vulnerable individuals. Number five, everyone 65 years old and above. And then number six, people aged 16 to 64 years with underlying health conditions which put them at higher risk of serious illness or death from coronavirus. This group includes people with all types of diabetes. So there you have it. Okay, you are, if you are between 16 and 64, then you're in, and you've got diabetes of any type, you're in group six. If you are above 64, so 65 and above, then you are in group 5, by the looks of it there. So anyway, hopefully that's helpful. Who knows what it is in your own country? You'll have to check out what the vaccine situation is in your own country. Just going back to my parents for a second there, they had theirs and no side effects whatsoever, a little bit of a soreness where the injection was, I think, but nothing much more than that. Although I didn't get to speak to them this evening, so I haven't heard how they are today, but certainly on the Saturday and the Sunday, they were fine. And I've had quite a lot of patients in who have been having the vaccine as well, because a lot of our patients, of course, as podiatrists, a lot of them are elderly. Although we do see young people as well, so you know, if you've got feet and you've got a problem, do come and see us at circlepodiatry.co.uk, either virtually or in person. And of course, if you're not local and you don't want to go virtual, go and see your local podiatrist, okay, if you've got a foot problem. Anyway, that quick ad over. Let's get back into some of the news items regarding diabetes. And the next thing that I want to have a look at is actually from the diabetes.co.uk's website. That's not the charity, that's diabetes.co.uk. And they are saying that our Prime Minister over here says there is no doubt that the COVID vaccine targets will be met. Well, of course, he will say that, but I must say they do seem to be getting on pretty well. They're aiming to do 13 million of the first inoculation by the middle of February. And I think they're at about 4 million already, so they're doing pretty well on that score. Let's hope that continues. Now, the next one's an interesting one. I'm hoping strongly that as listeners to the Diabetes Show, you're obviously taking your diabetes serious, otherwise you wouldn't be giving it up, giving up your time, rather, to listen to me. Maybe you're listening on behalf of a loved one. The next one is talking about smoking. So if you're taking your diabetes seriously, you seriously want to make sure that you're stopped smoking or you're stopping smoking. And if you are a loved one listening in, please try to get your loved one to stop. It has all sorts of complications with it regarding diabetes, with regards to the circulation, etc. But smokers are more likely to become seriously ill with COVID-19 and end up in hospital. That's what the latest research has said, carried out at King's College London. Looks at the severity of coronavirus among people who smoke, and they were saying that basically that the findings suggested smokers were 14% more likely to develop the classic COVID-19 symptoms, which are fever, persistent cough, and shortness of breath than compared to non-smokers. They were also 29% more likely to experience more than five different symptoms. And the risk of ending up in hospital is more than twice as likely among smokers too. So please, I'm sure you've heard the message before, try to give up smoking. The next one is from diabetes.co.uk as well. And let's give a round of applause to Wales. And I'm not talking about rugby, okay? If you're a rugby fan, as am I, I'm an English rugby fan. Sorry to disappoint you, any Welsh listeners. But we are giving the Welsh a round of applause in this situation, not for rugby, but because a Welsh company develops the first non-invasive diabetes watch. This looks really exciting, actually. It's thought that this device, the Afon device, will be the first non-invasive, real-time, continuous glucose monitor that can be worn conveniently on the wrist. That is something which sounds really, really good. As some of you know, I have been wearing a continuous glucose monitor in my arm for the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, monitoring my blood glucose as a result of trying to see what's going on with the diet I've been doing. And I must say there was a bit of a blip in Christmas, and actually it gives you an estimated HbA1c, and my HbA1c went up by 0.4%, I think it was, which I wasn't wanting. I'm glad to say that it's actually gone back down again already, the estimated HbA1c. Things have been a lot better this last week, actually, in my blood glucose control. So that's really good. But this watch sounds really exciting. Keep an eye open for that. It's the Afon device from Wales in the UK here. The next one is a report which is saying experts warn that the NHS is at breaking point with COVID-19. I think health services around the world are being stretched by this, of course. But apparently the NHS, this last week has been one of the worst times possible, both in the COVID crisis, but also in history, I think, of the NHS. Hospital services are hugely delayed. There's problems with people having to wait. There's loads of people who healthcare workers, nurses, doctors who have got COVID, who've got to quarantine and be off. There's loads of patients being admitted. I think it was one every 30 seconds in the UK were being admitted to hospital. That's what, 4,500 or so, 4,000 per day. That's a lot of hospital admissions for any health service to try and cope with. NHS England Medical Director Professor Stephen Powis has said, at the moment the health service was facing an exceptionally tough challenge and services were continued to be delayed until the virus is under control. There's quite a lot on that. Do go and read up on it. And of course, I'm sure it's been updated regularly. Right, the next one's an interesting one, as I've only just read it 2 or 3 days after my parents have had their vaccine. And apparently, People are being advised not to drink alcohol for a couple of days before the vaccine for a couple of weeks afterwards. Now, this is, I haven't heard this actually until I just read it here on diabetes.co.uk's website. Apparently, Dr. Fiona Sim, who I believe is from the charity Drink Aware. Yeah, she's the panel's chair for Drink Aware. And she said, first and foremost, we urge you to listen to the advice to stay at home as much as possible and stop the spread of the virus. And if you get offered the vaccine, have it. And this is regardless of whether you have had a drink or not. So if you've had a drink of alcohol and you're due to have your vaccine tomorrow, still go and have it, okay? But we advise that if possible, that you don't drink any alcohol for a couple of days before and at least 2 weeks after you've been vaccinated to try to ensure your immune system is at its best to respond to the vaccine and protect you. Goes on to say that at the moment, there's very little research has been done into the effect of alcohol and the body's reaction to the vaccine. But there is evidence to suggest that large quantities of booze can reduce the body's ability to build immunity. Now, my parents are probably going to be listening to this, and I don't want them or anyone else to think that I'm suggesting that they are heavy boozers. We joke that they like their little social drink from time to time. On a serious note, it looks like it's probably best to abstain for a little while afterwards, give your body the best possible chance to respond to the vaccine and give you immunity to the virus. Okay, so all of these have been from diabetes.co.uk. There's one more to do for this week, and that is a nice positive one to finish on. There's been a bit of speculation as to whether or not the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine will work against the new strains of COVID-19. Apparently, a study carried out by two companies teamed up with the University of Texas has found evidence to suggest that antibodies found in those who have been immunized were still effective. So that sounds good. In fact, Phil Dormitzer, the viral vaccine expert from Pfizer, said, "We've now tested 16 different mutations and none of them have really had any significant impact. That's the good news. That doesn't mean the 17th won't." So, you know, obviously hedging their bets there. It sounds like things are good, but of course this virus and any virus will be constantly mutating. So go and check that out on diabetes.co.uk's website if you're interested in reading a bit more about it. And keep your eyes open for any other bits of news, because things are always popping up. In fact, just as I logged on to do this bit of the show now, I found another item that came on just literally an hour before, and that was from local10.com, and its title is "Could Gut Bacteria Affect Diabetes Treatments?" Apparently, gastroenterologist Dr. Leon Matarchi with Memorial Healthcare and Gastro Health said a recent study found that after feeding rodents a Western diet, they identified bacteria in the gut associated with glucose intolerance, which is linked to diabetes and fatty liver disease. And what they found was replacing those bacteria associated with diabetes and fatty liver, they were able to change the course of those problems in the animals. So keep your eyes open for news items, and you know, maybe even put an alert on your phone to be alerted when different items come up to do with diabetes if you really are interested in it. We are going to be having an interview shortly. We're going to have an interview with Dr. Louise Durrant. Now, she is a nutritionalist, and she is, a PhD in vitamin D. So no prizes for guessing what our subject is going to be about today. It's going to be all about vitamin D. And to kick us off, before that, we're going to have a song. And the song is going to be by Bill Withers, and it's called Ain't No Sunshine.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home anytime she goes away. But ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
That was Bill Withers and Ain't No Sunshine. You're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And I just wanted to play that song because the interview we're going to be listening to right now is with Dr. Louise Durrant. And she has a PhD in vitamin D, which of course you don't get or you can't make in your body when there isn't any sunshine around. So I hope you enjoyed the song, hope you enjoyed the link, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy the interview. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Louise Durrant. Okay, Louise, it's great to have you on The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And I actually introduced you beforehand, but I'll just double check that I introduced you correctly. You're Dr. Louise Durrant. You've got a PhD in the topic of vitamin D, I believe, and you're a nutritionist, is that right?
Yeah, so I'm a dietitian. I trained as a dietitian, and then I went on to do my PhD, and my research was all around vitamin D. So we ran a big human intervention trial, giving people vitamin D supplements and measuring their vitamin D status and how their body responded to those supplements.
Okay, and of course, vitamin D, that's why we played the song about sunshine earlier on. Anyway, tell me a little bit about it, because you work for Yakult, I believe.
Yes. So I now work at Yakult as a science manager. So I support them with their kind of nutrition and research work. But the reason I'm here talking about vitamin D with you today is for a combination of reasons. So one is that Yakult have recently added vitamin D into their Yakult Light product. Okay. But in addition to that, it's a particularly important time of the year to be talking about vitamin D. So I think a lot of people know of it as the sunshine vitamin. You can make it from exposing your skin to sunlight. But actually, during the winter months, between the months of October and March, we can't actually make vitamin D from sunlight. So even on a lovely sunny day, we won't be making any vitamin D when we're out in the sun. And that's to do with the wavelengths that the sun produces. So the sun has to be a certain height in the sky for us to be able to make vitamin D. And a really nice way of finding out if you're making vitamin D or not is by measuring the length of your shadow. So if your shadow is shorter than your height, you'll be able to make vitamin D. But if it's longer than your height, which it is throughout all of winter, then you won't be making any vitamin D. So really, then you need to be thinking about how you get vitamin D without being able to make it from sun. So that's thinking about your dietary sources. So that's why we're working with Yakult on this campaign around vitamin D at the moment.
I've just got visions of people trying with a big, big long tape measure, trying to measure their height and their shadow moving as they try to.
But, you wouldn't believe the number of times I've had a go just to make sure it was right.
Okie dokes. So it's a vitamin which we can produce by our own bodies, but the bottom line is that you don't get enough of it in the winter time. And I never realised actually until
reading up before doing this interview, but actually that was the case. And it's the wrong wavelengths of sunshine. I just thought it was just the fact that we live in the UK and there's just not much sunshine full stop in the winter. But it's actually, even on a sunny day, you're saying it's the wrong wavelengths.
Yes, yeah. So the further away from the equator you live, the less time within the year that those wavelengths are available, because it's all about the height or the angle of the sun in the sky. So people that live near to the equator, they can actually make vitamin D from the sun all year round. Saying that, there are still vitamin D deficiency problems in countries near to the equator for a combination of reasons, sometimes because they are spending more time indoors because it's too warm outside, or they're covering their skin for cultural reasons or putting lots of sunscreen on. So we still see deficiency in those countries. But actually, in the UK, we have deficiency rates that, you know, we really need to be thinking about, and people need to be thinking about their vitamin D intakes.
Okay. There's quite a bit of confusion, I think, going on about, you know, why it is so important, and I'm sure you're going to clear that up for us. But the main reasons for needing vitamin D, what would you say that they are?
Yeah, so where the evidence is really strong and really clear is around our bone health and our muscle function. So that's where all the dietary recommendations have been based upon. You know, how much vitamin D do we need to be able to maintain our bone health? If we have an adequate vitamin D status or level within our blood, then that helps us to absorb calcium from the diet. And calcium, obviously, most people are aware that that has its important role with bone health. So that's where vitamin D is linked with bone health. And that's where the strongest evidence really is. There's also evidence to support vitamin D in supporting our normal immune function. So we're not saying, you know, you take extra vitamin D and you can enhance your immune function, but actually having a healthy level of vitamin D in your bloodstream just helps to support your normal immune function. And that's really where the evidence level is at. There's lots of stories about vitamin D supporting other health conditions, and there are associations. So we have ideas that there may be a role of vitamin D, but it might be that there's other factors to play. So it might be that people have a higher vitamin D status because they go outside a lot and therefore perhaps are exercising more. And perhaps that's the benefit, you know, with all these other conditions, so cardiovascular disease, diabetes, that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a bit cloudier beyond bone health, muscle function and immune function.
But the bottom line is probably as well, unless you go excessively taking too much, it's not going to do you any harm taking a supplement, having it in your Yakult drink, or having plenty of sunshine. It's not going to do you any harm. It's going to do your bones and things good. Or can it do you harm?
So it is possible to reach a toxic level, but it's actually quite difficult to achieve. You know, the amount you have to be consuming is quite high. So the government advice is a supplement of 10 micrograms a day. So if you're taking a supplement with around 10 micrograms a day, and you're also getting some sun exposure, and you're also having some dietary sources, so foods like oily fish, your salmon, your mackerel, your sardines, your red meat, your eggs, and some mushrooms as well. And also then your fortified food, so products that have had vitamin D added into them in the manufacturing process, then, you know, even having a variety of sources of vitamin D, you're still unlikely to be reaching that toxic level, the level that's too high. It's only if you really start taking super high doses of supplements that you might have to start, you know, thinking about limiting your vitamin D. But really, if you look for something that has around 10 micrograms a day of vitamin D in it, then that will be absolutely fine.
Oh, my ears are pricking up here, okay, because let's use me as a case study. Actually, before we use me as a case study, darker skinned people, am I correct in thinking that they may need to supplement more readily than others, maybe, or not?
So the darker your skin tone, the longer it takes for you to make vitamin D from sunlight.
Okay.
So it's just that that it takes a bit longer to make the same amount of vitamin D from sunlight. But we don't really need that much sun exposure to make enough vitamin D. So a study came out a few years ago, and they estimated you only need something like 9 minutes of sun exposure a day. So having your arms and legs out in the sun for about 9 minutes will make the majority of, you know, will give you that dose of vitamin D that you need in a day. So really, it's not about kind of sitting out in the sun sunbathing. It's just a short bout short bouts of sun exposure. So even those with darker skin, although it can take them a bit longer to make vitamin D, they'll probably still be getting some from sunlight during the summer months. But actually during the winter, you know, none of us in the UK will be making vitamin D. There are some population groups that are recommended supplements all year round. That's babies and infants who are not on formula or on less than 500 mils of infant formula. If you're pregnant and breastfeeding, and then also if you're not outdoors much or you're covering your skin for cultural reasons. So that might be people who are perhaps living in care homes and aren't getting outside much. Or if people are really, you know, sun conscious and are covering their skin all the time. Obviously, we have to balance that risk of skin cancer and sun exposure. So really, the message when it comes to sun exposure is, you know, you don't even need your skin to be getting hot to touch. You know, you don't need to be getting warm skin, and you certainly don't need to be getting red skin. You just need to be out. Your kind of habitual outdoors activity will help you to make vitamin D.
So 9 minutes, that's all it is.
Yes. Wow. But again, just remember that's only in the summer months and when your shadow is shorter than your height. So that's, we still come back to that issue in the winter when we need to be thinking about our dietary sources.
So if you're not actually likely to overdose, you know, if 10 is the guidance, I was reading that, I think they say, this is coming to me in a minute, I think they say that over 100 micrograms is, the NHS was saying anyway, that over 100 micrograms, that can get you up to a sort of dodgy level.
Yeah. So really we're talking about 10 micrograms a day is what you want.
If you're having 10, you're unlikely to be... If you take a supplement of 10 a day, you're not really going to necessarily have to be chasing the sun.
No. If you're taking your supplements and having some dietary sources, then you don't need to be worrying about getting that sun exposure for your vitamin D production. And so really, you know, perhaps that's the safest way for a lot of people to at least know that they're getting the vitamin D that they need.
So I think we'll just break up the interview a little bit here and have a quick song. It's going to be a song to fill us with sunshine. It's called Sunshine and it's by the artist Gabrielle.
Afraid to live life and fulfill my
Hopefully you're feeling a bit warmer after that song, Gabrielle and Sunshine. And you're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, and we're halfway through our interview with Dr. Louise Durrant. If you joined us during that song, she's talking all about vitamin D. She has a PhD in vitamin D. And the reason, of course, that we played that song, Sunshine, is because sunshine, when the wavelengths are of a certain length, are able to cause your body to produce vitamin D. Anyway, let's leave it to Louise to tell us a little bit more about why vitamin D is so important and how we can get enough of it.
Let's come to me then as a case study here. Okay, so I'm 53. I'm Caucasian. And I've recently started taking a supplement for various reasons. And one I found, and I'm going to ask you about this, whether it's a good way of taking it, first of all, is whether a spray version is a good way of taking it. So it's an oral spray that you can spray into your mouth as opposed to tablets or whatever. Is that good? Or
Yeah. So there's been some studies. The spray came out probably somewhere between 5 and 8 years ago, I think. I'm trying to remember. I was doing my PhD when the spray started coming out. So okay. Probably around 8 years ago. And there were some studies to show if it was as effective as taking a supplement. And they are. They are just as effective as taking a supplement. So the spray forms are fine. And actually, for people that struggle to swallow tablets, you know, perhaps children or elderly, then a spray might be a useful way to go about it. And I know a lot of the baby vitamin D come in drop format as well. So there's drops, there's sprays, and there's tablet forms.
Right. Okay. However, the one that, actually my wife did call me from the shop and said, look, which one do you want? Because there are three different strengths. And I will go for the strongest one. So that is actually, I believe, the equivalent of the 100.
Okay.
Which is like what the NHS are saying, actually, is really high, and you could end up with kidney problems, heart problems, liver, no, not liver, weak bones.
So the NHS, so the NHS have set that as a recommendation because in the US, for example, you can get hold of mega, mega high doses of vitamin D that actually you just don't need. So ultimately, it's a waste of money, really. If you've got a supplement that has a really high dose, then you could think about taking one a week rather than one a day. So you're still getting that vitamin D in. You know, you've already bought the packet and, you know, perhaps you don't want to throw them all away. You know, perhaps to get through it, you could consider having one a week for a period until the packet's over. And then I would look at a lower dose because you just don't need that higher dose.
So when I finish this spray, I should get a lower dosage one probably. I don't need it. Okay, cool. That's fine by me. Glycemic control, does it have any effect on that? Because again, I've been reading different things on that regarding people with diabetes or possibly even developing type 2 partly because of it. And I think I know what your answer is going to be. I'm pretty sure it's going to be, well, yeah, vitamin D is one thing, but is it the activity you're going outside and you're getting more?
Yeah, absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head there. So, yeah. I mean, again, there are some associations. So that means studies have looked at groups that have poor glycemic control versus perhaps people whose glycemic control is in the healthy range. And they can see differences in their vitamin D status. But again, that's probably or potentially down to differences in lifestyle, differences in dietary habits, and factors like that that are likely to be contributing. So we can't say for sure that a certain vitamin D concentration in your blood is going to help prevent or to treat glycemic control in any way. So really, I think at the moment, we still say, you know, your lifestyle factors are important when it comes down to glycemic control and to diabetes and following the advice of your healthcare professional, rather than, you know, vitamin D being at the top of your list of something you need to think about in treating or preventing diabetes.
Yeah, I was pretty certain that you were going to be coming across with that. It's not a magic pill, so to speak, but it
although
can help.
I think a lot of people hope it would be.
Yeah, everyone clutches whatever comes out. Now, I was reading an article, again, in preparation for this. I had actually come across it before this as well, actually, but I sort of read it in a bit, again, in a bit more interest. It was only a few days ago, I think, where saying that the panel made up of experts from UK National Institute of Health and Care Excellence, NICE, and Public Health England, and the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition, come up with the findings that there's not enough evidence at the moment to suggest that vitamin D helps protect from the dreaded COVID-19, or that it in fact boosts recovery. But they do say that people should continue taking it anyway, and this is according to this panel of experts. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so the panel of experts have really, they've looked at all the evidence that exists around vitamin D and coronavirus. And obviously there isn't that much evidence because, you know, we haven't had it around for all that long. I appreciate it might have felt like a long time for most people. But what has been looked at in the past is the associations between vitamin D and upper respiratory tract infections. And there's been a few studies that have shown a positive effect in preventing upper respiratory tract infections. But actually, again, the evidence isn't strong enough to suggest any role for vitamin D in preventing or treating coronavirus at this stage. That isn't to say it isn't being looked at. So I had a look at the number of trials that are ongoing at the moment, and there's over 40 studies looking at vitamin D and COVID at the moment worldwide. So I think we will have more evidence in the near future. But at the moment, the evidence certainly suggests that there isn't a role for vitamin D in preventing and treating COVID. But the Public Health England and the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition are really pushing the message around vitamin D being important for us to consider. And that's because during the summer months that we've just had, it's likely that because of coronavirus, most people have spent more time indoors. Yeah. So they haven't had that boost in vitamin D status that they normally would have had. And so probably we have a higher deficiency level across the UK, and people have slightly lower vitamin D levels in their blood than they normally would have at this time of the year. And so really everyone needs to be thinking about what foods are they having that contain vitamin D, and how can they get vitamin D in their diet, and perhaps consider taking a supplement.
Okay, well, brilliant. Let's talk a little bit about, would you say, Yakko, that would you say that it becomes a supplement in this respect? I suppose you're supplying extra vitamin D, so you would call it a supplement, would you? Or do you just call it
pill? So the Yakult Light is it's a fermented milk drink that's been enriched with vitamin D. So really they're classed as kind of fortified foods.
Right, okay. So I'm sure some of the listeners will be wanting to learn a little bit more about Yakult. Can you give a way they can find out more about it?
Yeah, they can go to yakult.co.uk and have a look on the website there. Yakult is also on Facebook as well, so people can have a look up on there. But the website will contain more information, you know, about the two products that are available and where they can access it.
Okay, it's wonderful. And just to say before, just remembering as well, it's not just sunlight and supplements. You can get it from some other sources of food as well, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. So oily fish.
Okay.
Your salmon, mackerel, sardines, red meat contains some vitamin D, and eggs, liver and mushrooms. And actually mushrooms, if you buy some mushrooms from the supermarket and you put them outside in the sunlight, that can increase their vitamin D concentration a little bit more, because they're a bit like us in that they can make vitamin D from sunshine. Then the other foods are your fortified foods. So products that have had vitamin D added into them during the production process, and that will be on the label of the foods. And they're a really nice way of incorporating extra vitamin D into your diet. So lots of breakfast cereals have had vitamin D added into them. Some orange juice, some eggs are enriched, enhancing their vitamin D content. And then there's yogurt drinks and fermented milk drinks like Yakult Light.
How do they enhance an egg? Are they injected in or something?
It comes down to actually I can't remember how the eggs have been enhanced in vitamin D, but I think it's something in the feed, feed of the hens, so they have a higher vitamin D concentration, so then the eggs they produce are enhanced in their vitamin D content.
But a bit labor intensive injecting every single egg of a microgram.
Yeah.
Okay, looks. Right, before I ask any other stupid questions, is there anything else you want to get across to the listeners that I haven't asked you, that we haven't discussed today?
I think it would just be more that there's lots of myths around vitamin D and lots of kind of stories, like you mentioned earlier, that it perhaps is this wonder pill, and really the strongest evidence and the most important reason why we have to think about vitamin D is for our bone health. And that's, you know, even though you won't necessarily feel symptoms if you're deficient in vitamin D, in later life it can lead to kind of weakening of our bones, something called osteoporosis, and that can increase our risk of fracture in older life. So although we might not feel that we're deficient in vitamin D and we might not be able to easily know, we still need to be thinking about it quite proactively to help us in later life.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we're all about keeping ourselves feeling younger and active and able to use our feet, as this might well go out on my other show, the Foot Health Show too. I think it's definitely appropriate getting people out there in the sunshine and walking.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Louise, for your time today and for sharing. It's I'm sure it's going to be very helpful for all the listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
I wish you a happy Christmas, although this is going to go out probably after Christmas, to be honest.
Happy Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, 2021.
Indeed. And keep safe and well.
You too. Thank you very much.
Many thanks. Bye.
So thank you, Dr. Louise, for that interview. Wonderful. I can just envisage us now trying to measure our shadows, or maybe even if we're putting our mushrooms out in the sunshine, measuring the shadow of the mushroom to make sure it's getting enough sunshine to produce its own vitamin D. Anyway, if you're lucky enough to live in a country where you're getting sunshine with your shadow shorter than yourself, then you're getting that vitamin D. If you're not, then maybe you do need to be taking that supplement. I hope you've enjoyed the interview, and please do hang around for the next song, which is something which really we really do want over here in the UK at this time of year. It's a bit about sunshine, and this song is by Bruce Springsteen, and it's called We're Living in Hope. It's called Hello Sunshine.
Had enough of heartbreaking pain. I had a little sweet spot for the rain. For the rain in skies of gray. Hello sunshine, won't you stay? No, I always like my walking shoes, but you can get a little too fond of the blues. You walk too far, you walk away. Hello sunshine, won't you stay? Oh, I always loved a lonely time. Those empty streets, no one around. You fall in love with lonely, you end up that way. Hello sunshine, won't you stay? Thank you. sunshine, won't you stay? Hello, sunshine, won't you stay? Hello, sunshine.
Well, that was Bruce Springsteen and Hello Sunshine. Let's hope we're going to be able to say that soon over here in the UK and to any of you other countries where you're not getting much at the moment. We want it back. We want some sunshine. Funny thing is, of course, that I know there'll be places in the world that are saying, we don't want sunshine. We want rain right now. It's always greener on the other side, isn't it? Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the show today. You are listening, have been listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. If you missed the interview and just joined us during that song, then please do go back and listen to the interview. It's all about vitamin D and its importance. And we were listening to Dr. Louise Durrant, who has a PhD in vitamin D. So she is a real expert on that. Hopefully you have found it helpful. I hope you have a fantastic week ahead. Please do get in touch if you've got any queries at all, any questions about the show today, anything that you've got on your mind that you want to hear on the show. If you've got a particular topic that you are itching to find out about, if nobody can answer your question, then please get in touch. We will find an expert who will be able to answer your question. I can pretty much guarantee it. That's a challenge I'm putting out to myself here. If you've got a question, let me know and I will try and find an expert who will be able to answer your question. Maybe you want to come on the show. Maybe you've got a fantastic story you want to share, a success story, or maybe a horror story of your diabetes. Please do get in touch. We would love to have you on the show. It's so much better when we've got guests who are actually living with diabetes, able to share their stories. So please do get back in touch with us and let us know. You can contact us via email at contact@undefeated.org. contact@undefeated.org. Undefeated is spelled with all E's. If you haven't checked out our website before, then please do go to it, www.undefeated.org. Undefeated is spelled with all E's. And you'll see on there that we are passionate about helping you as a person with diabetes remain undefeated, i.e. remain without complications to your feet, which can so often lead to amputation. Thank you so much for listening today. Please do tell any of your friends with diabetes to get in touch with us. If you haven't checked out the Health Triangle magazine, then do go and check it out. I've got two articles coming out shortly in that, one on diabetes and one on foot health. So please do check it out. There are many other people in there who write for it as well. And of course, there are many other shows here on UK Health Radio. Do check out some of the other shows as well. Go to ukhealthradio.com and you can find a list of all the shows and their schedule. Anyway, that's it for this week. Have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep well, keep your blood sugars at a good level. And of course, may God bless you. And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Alton with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot. Live in the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.